Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. The debate over education reform frequently comes down to charters versus district schools. Call it a bright line or an overly simplistic divide or a political dichotomy. However you describe it, the divide is there. But some education advocates say there's a third way in education, that it doesn't have to be either or, but and, incorporating the best ideas and practices from charter schools and district schools in an attempt to make all schools better. Well, one of those advocates is Chris Gabrielli. He's the CEO of the education consulting group Empower Schools, chairman of the Massachusetts Board of Higher Education, and a lecturer at Harvard's Graduate School of Education. And full disclosure, Gabrielli is also a financial supporter of WBUR's education reporting. But he joins us now in the studio. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Glad to be with you.
It's great to have you. We're going to talk about the third way, quote unquote, in just a moment. But I also want to introduce the person sitting right next to you, Lisa Geisbahn. She's the executive director of the advocacy group Citizens for Public Schools, which has been supporting public schools since 1982 here in Massachusetts. Lisa Geisbahn, welcome to you.
Thank you.
It's great to have you. So listeners, we also want to hear from you because I know you have a lot of informed and passionate thoughts about education. Do you think there can be a new way, a third way, somewhere between district and charter schools that we can incorporate into education in Massachusetts? Can we take best practices from both models and put them together? And if so, what would that third way look like? Or do you think this is just opening the door to more charter schools? I know there are some of you out there who might think that too. Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet, as always, at Radio Boston. So Chris, let me just first start with you. When we say there's an idea of this third way, I mean, you actually hosted U.S. Education Secretary John King last week in Boston to talk about the concept. So I mean, what does a third way mean?
Yeah, that's a fair question. And, you know, I think in theory and in practice, let me say, in theory, it is, I think you captured it well. So, you know, there are some things about districts that people really want to keep. They want to keep universal service, that every student be served. They want to keep that there's a democratic voice in decision making, that elected and appointed officials are at the table in public discussions about those decisions. I think they want to keep that the deal for teachers is, the working conditions and deal for teachers is fair and sustainable. On the other hand, there's some good things that charters have put forward. They brought a level of autonomy and accountability at the school level that we have not historically had, and in some cases have been able to turn that into really great results for kids. And they've brought a certain energy around kind of a relentless spirit of improvement, again, that they're best, that has really made a difference. And so, you know, that's sort of the theory. Can't you have from both Category A and Category B? Out in Springfield, Massachusetts, there's a Springfield Empowerment Zone Partnership. It was formed by the school committee out there, by the union out there, by the mayor and superintendent, by the state, and by us. Mm-hmm. And it houses 9 very poorly performing, struggling middle schools where students have been doing poorly for years and where it was clear something new and different had to happen. And what's cool is the teachers agreed by a 92% to 8% to a contract that's so different that all the working conditions are set at the schools. The district provides most of the money in the buildings so that teachers and educators in the buildings are able to make the decisions that matter about the school schedule, about hiring, about curriculum, about how the budget's spent. You know, we're really excited to see the early results.
So Springfield, and another example, which I know third way advocates bring up, is Lawrence. But in both of those cases, I mean, the schools essentially sort of hit rock bottom. Is that what's necessary for the door to be open for a third way? I mean, is it something that would only really work for the most poorly performing of poorly performing districts?
Well, I think that's a place where we know we need to make probably the biggest changes because what we've been doing hasn't been working. But we also presented about Denver, Colorado, a place we also work, where, for example, a group of middle to high performing district schools that had some degrees of autonomies, and there's, I think, schools like this in Boston as well, wanted the same deal that charters get, the high level of autonomy. And Denver's recently announced a decision to go forward with that. So I think it can happen in different environments. I think ultimately educators need to be trusted and challenged to do the things it takes to help kids succeed.
Okay, so there's a lot more to dig into there, but Lisa, let me bring you in here. I mean, what's your What's your first reaction, your first thought about the possibility of finding a new way, a third way?
Well, some of it sounds positive and interesting, giving teachers more autonomy. That's a good thing. But, you know, it's pretty new and unproven at this point. And it's not something that's going to be on the ballot for voters to look at. And there is something that's going to be on the ballot in November.
Regarding charter schools.
Regarding charter schools, yeah. And raising the cap. And it just seems funny to be talking about this now when we have this very sort of momentous decision coming up that is going to have a huge impact and draw hundreds of millions of dollars away from struggling district schools.
Okay, can I jump in here? Because I take your point about that. But isn't that also, you know, exactly why a conversation about a third way that's not, you know, again, it's not the, it should it be more charters or fewer charters? Isn't that why it makes this conversation that advocates are trying to push more compelling?
Well, I think, again, it kind of moves us away from the big picture, which is that we're sort of under-resourcing our schools. There's been a big conversation about the foundation budget that was first established by the 1993 Education Reform Act, and it's been concluded that, you know, it's not adequate anymore because of rising costs like special education and healthcare costs. So we really just, the pot is not big enough to serve the needs of all of our children. So, you know, we already know what works.
Right.
You know, there's certain sort of fundamental things that are well established, solidly established by the research. There are things like quality early childhood education and small class sizes, especially in the early grades, and well-trained, supported teachers, again, who have the autonomy to use the knowledge they have to meet the needs of the children.
So here,
and what I'm concerned about is that if we, you know, if this ballot question succeeds, and I'm curious to hear what Chris thinks about the ballot question, that we will be losing, you know, just the resources for district schools will just be decimated, and a lot of really basic needs of children will not be met.
Okay, so two parts there, and then let's just hit the first part that you brought up. I mean, Chris, what do you think of the idea that perhaps talking about a third way now is, as Lisa put it, a distraction from this very concrete question about lifting the charter cap that voters will have to vote on in November?
I think that's the distraction. I mean, I think we've got tens of thousands, really hundreds of thousands of students in Massachusetts doing poorly in our most struggling communities. And I don't think that the charter cap is the central issue. I think we have to come up with ways that move beyond where we've been stuck. So, you know, when Lisa, we say, you know, it's unproven, I take a look at, say, Lawrence, where that was the lowest performing and corrupt district in the state. Student performance has, you know, vaulted up. The mayor, when he asked for the receivership, and I'm not, the third way is not about receiverships, although the educational strategy they took forward in Lawrence is very much the same one that we are doing in Springfield once you say how to actually improve the schools. But, you know, the mayor wrote a letter saying, my kids are thriving in some schools, including some charters, I might add. My kids are thriving in those schools and doing poorly in my own schools. It's got to be somewhat about how the schools are being run. And lo and behold, 3 years later, the schools are doing a lot better. In Denver, where they've gone to a version of this third way strategy that does involve the district and the charters working more collaboratively, they've gone from the lowest growth urban district in Colorado to the highest growth urban district in Colorado. So they've gained population, unlike a place like Boston where the schools have been losing population. Denver public schools have been gaining population from suburbs and other schools. So I think there's actually a fair amount of evidence that when you get away from the fight about governance and the political fight some people want to have and focus on how to get educators the opportunity they need and deserve to drive success for kids, that good decisions get made, and the outcome's better. And I think we need to get about doing that.
Okay, so what about the second point that Lisa made, that that there isn't necessarily any need for, quote-unquote, third-way innovation when it comes to education, that she had a list of all these best practices that we already know have very positive outcomes for children, early childhood education, greater support for teachers, smaller classroom sizes, all these things. Why look to a third way when we could just be doing these things more?
Well, I think it comes down to, you know, results and where we stand. I mean, Massachusetts has one of the largest achievement gaps in the country. We have, and in a place like Springfield, Many of these schools are in the first or second percentile of the state for middle schools. These are schools that are really struggling. The students are very challenged. There's a lot of disadvantage. There are certainly people who focus on saying, what more can we do for housing? What more can we do for jobs for the families? But I also think there's what more can we do in those schools. Let me take a simple example. Run the hours kids need. Almost all successful charter schools and all the schools in Springfield that are in the zone, all the schools in Lawrence that are K-8, now run the hours kids need, which is a longer school day. And they do it and pay teachers more. But do it in an affordable way.
Lisa, I'm going to get you back in here. But Chris, I just have to ask you a question. I mean, what is your response to anyone who hears you and says, this third way to me just sounds like a Trojan horse for charter schools?
Sure. I mean, I closed my comments by saying some people are going to say this is a defense for the inertia of districts, and some people are going to say this is exactly Trojan horse for charters. And to them, I say, look, you guys are going to spend probably $25, $30 million fighting on TV. You're commanding almost all of the attention of all the media with the fight between charters and districts. We're busy just trying to help some kids in schools get ahead. So, you know, the third way is happening. There are 400 people at that event, the Secretary of Education of our state, the United States Secretary of Education. I think it's kind of hard to deny that something good is happening on the ground when people get away from the political fights.
Lisa Geisbond, your response to that?
Well, the ballot question is also happening, and it's a big threat. And I do wonder if you support the ballot question or not, Chris, because I just think what happens with that is going to really lay the groundwork for, you know, a devastating effect on our schools. I'll just give the example of Boston schools, where we've seen, I believe WBUR has reported very well on students walking out, thousands of students walking out of school because they've seen the resources flow out of their school. They've seen staff cut, excellent programming cut, like the Diploma Plus program in Charlestown. I mean, this is not an abstract theoretical conversation for these kids. They see it happening right before their eyes, and they see the potential for more resources to flow out of their schools and more cuts to their education and their younger brothers and sisters' education. So, this is not abstract. Yeah. This is concrete.
So I want to take a couple callers here in just a second, but since you've asked twice, Chris Gabrielle, let me just put the question to you as well. Are you in support of the ballot measure to lift the cap on charters in November?
Let me answer that two ways. As a flag carrier for this third way, I'm trying to step away from the fight. So, you know, I have friends on both sides. In Lawrence and Springfield, for example, all of the work we're doing and involved in is in district schools with neighborhood assignments. You know, it's about raising the performance of those. It's done in partnership with them. It's done in partnership with the unions. So I feel comfortable that. It's also done in partnership in some cases with some people who used to work in charters and with some entities that have operated charters. And when they're willing to work in a district setting, take the students assigned in the neighborhood, take a union contract and bring their A game, I think they're a great ally. So my big answer is I don't think it's, you know, where all the resources are being wasted right now. How I will personally vote in the ballot, I mean, I've run for office in support of charters. I mean, of course, it's pretty clear. I haven't changed my view. I don't think, though, that's the solution. That's not where I'm putting my time and energy. I'm putting my time and energy into working with people to build constructive solutions that are making a difference for large numbers of kids now by dropping the fight. So, you know, I don't want to get tempted into sort of debating, you know, something that we can debate till the cows come home. But for most kids in the state, it's going to make no difference either which way.
All right, let's
that's a yes.
Well, let's take some callers here. Paul is calling from Lunenburg. You're on the air, Paul.
All right, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I really felt I needed to call in. I've been a public school teacher for 20 years, and I want to say that my opposition to charters is really based on the idea that I see them as siphoning off money and kids, and it's people chasing a simplified solution to a very complex problem. And I think I like the idea of this third way. Lisa talked about all the best practices that we know of. Chris talked about the fact that district schools are often tied because monies are allocated and decisions are based on how much money is available. Families want what's best for their kids, but so do teachers. And if we look for a simple solution, let's just up the charters.
Paul, let me just jump in here because, Paul, if I could just jump in here. The reason why we're having this conversation is because there are people, including Chris Gabrielli, who are saying we shouldn't just be looking for a simple solution, that we should try to move the conversation beyond district versus charter schools. I mean, so let me just ask you, from your perspective as a public school teacher, do you think it's even possible for us to see or to have a conversation about a third way, about incorporating best practices into some new model for education?
Well, as Mr. Gabrielli was saying, that if we can wrest control away from the folks who control the money and allow schools to make choices that work for their students, that's how we move forward. But when we get into the political campaign of an us versus them, we're not serving our kids either way.
Paul, I'm going to take it back from you because I want to get to some other calls, but it's a great point, and thank you so much for calling. Lisa Geisbaum, let me just turn that to you before I get to another caller. I mean, Paul, in a way, was saying that there's part of what Chris Gabrielli is saying that he thinks seems reasonable.
I think part of what Chris Gabrielli is saying seems reasonable, too, but I just feel like we can't really go there when we're facing this sort of Damocles over our heads that I just think is going to be so destructive. Like, if we defeat the ballot question, maybe we can go on and talk about third ways, although I still think that we know what works and we need to have the resources and invest them broadly so that every child has these opportunities to have, a whole child education and not be chasing after, test scores in math and reading.
Right. Chris?
I mean, one of your producers on the interview me for this said, you sound like you're too optimistic. And I said, when I hear of someone like Paul, an educator concerned about charters, but also wanting the autonomy at his school to be part of making the decision. I have seen so many educators in buildings in Springfield and Lawrence and in Denver and other places who, for the first time, get to make choices about the curriculum at the school. For the first time, set a schedule they think will work for kids. For the first time, are allowed to be on a hiring committee that decides who to hire for the school when there are new openings. If we don't bet on the educators who are directly facing the kids, and if we don't tap into the reason they went into teaching and give them all the tools and opportunities, including the kinds of practices Lisa's talking about, I don't know who we think is going to get it done. Command and control by any force, benign, malignant, in between. We've been trying that for a long time, and we've not been able to command our way to success. We got to trust our educators to be able to take advantage of these tools and go for it. Hold them accountable eventually, but give them the shot.
Well, let's take one more call here in the last couple seconds that we have. Tim is calling from Springfield. You're on the air, Tim.
Good afternoon. Two things. Number one, DESE needs to come up with an accountability system that is no longer about shame, blame, and punish, but is about study, learn, and support. And speaking of support, the legislature studied the funding of public education for a year, and they came to the conclusion that it wasn't adequate and it wasn't equitable. The equitable part is where we have the most failing schools in our gateway cities. And I certainly hope that our legislature finds the courage to do what I think they're morally obligated to do and support our schools with the most needy children so that we have the resources so we can meet the needs of these challenged children and they can be successful.
Tim, thank you so much for your call. And I want to get a last thought on what Tim said from both Lisa and Chris before we wrap up here. So Lisa, go ahead.
I completely agree with everything Tim just said, and we need to find the resources. We don't have the resources right now, and that's why I support the millionaire's tax, which would really help us get the resources that we need to give every child in Massachusetts the opportunities they need.
Chris Gabrielli?
Totally agree. Tim is right. Springfield's being shortchanged to the tune of $24 million a year because the foundation budget is not actually meeting the original definition of what it was supposed to be. For many suburban communities and for Boston that are well above foundation, it's less of an issue. In places like Lawrence and Springfield, where they're right at the foundation, we are, I think, violating our constitutional obligation, and that those resources would matter.
Well, Chris Gabrielli is CEO of the education consulting firm Empower Schools. He's also chairman of the Massachusetts Board of Higher Education. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Lisa Geisbaum, executive director of Citizens for Public Schools, which has been supporting public schools in Massachusetts since 1982. Lisa, thank you as well.
Thank you.
We'll be back in a minute. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.